All right. So we have a message I must read because it's from Natalia Vitrenko. For those who don't know her, doctor of economics, chairman of the Progressive Socialist Party of Ukraine, but a person who ran as a candidate for the presidency of Ukraine back in 1999 and was almost assassinated at that time, and has been associated with the Schiller Institute from before that point. I'm going to excerpt her message, and then we have a final video and we'll be at our conclusion. She said, "I am proud to be taking part together with the LaRouche movement in the fight to change the world and save civilization. I am proud to know Lyndon and Helga LaRouche, these outstanding public figures of our time, personally, and to know many LaRouche movement activists in the United States, Germany, France, Italy, Austria, and other countries. The officials in Brussels and Washington, pursuing their geopolitical goals and defending their own personal selfish interests, have entered into a shameful alliance with Ukrainian Nazis. Today, southeastern Ukraine is drowning in blood. Thousands of people have been killed. Tens of thousands are refugees. We have had the tragedies in Mariupol and Volnovakha, the blockade and humanitarian catastrophe in Slavyansk, and the use of cluster bombs and phosphorus bombs against civilians. These events and much more are going on right in front of our eyes in the center of Europe. But the United Nations and the OSCE remain silent, and neither the Red Cross nor journalists from international news agencies are operating in the hot spots of Ukraine. And in this setting, a massive media campaign has been launched within Ukraine aimed at turning the entire population of our country into Nazis and pitiless killer robots for the purpose of inciting war with Russia. There is no doubt that this would be a catastrophe for the Eurasian continent. I am certain that, as always, you will deliberate in depth on the causes of the war in Ukraine and identify who ordered it and carried it out and what their motives are. And as always, you will offer a peaceful alternative. I promise to do everything possible to bring your findings to the citizens of Ukraine. I wish you every success. Yours, Natalia Vitrenko." What we're going to do is the following. We have a video we're not going to show, which is of Congressman Neil Gallagher. We have been requested, Helga has requested, that we have at least 15 minutes of discussion, which means we'll start that right away. And for people who want to see that, you can check our website. Also, there are other messages. Let me acknowledge we have a message from South Africa, a message from the Republic of Korea, and some others. And all of these will be made available there as well. So we'll open the floor at this point for questions. Is Matthew there? Okay, great.
I'm going to take priority to new questions, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very excited about all the global development projects that you've mentioned, and it seems to me they require that the existing energy systems hold together until the new energy systems are put in place. How long, what time frame do you think we have to work within before the existing systems are no longer available?
Well, we have to have an absolute crash development of nuclear power. We're going to need 5,000 nuclear power plants while we have a crash program to develop fusion, to have it online by about perhaps 2040, 2030, 2040, depending on how much effort we put into it. In the meantime, we have to, of course, use whatever energy we can pull together by hydro and other things. Certainly no solar panels, no windmills. We don't waste resources on backward technologies. But we must have a crash nuclear program. We've just done a major study of that, which will be part of this project that we're putting together on what we need for a crash nuclear program and another piece on the urgent need to move into a entire new era, as Helga pointed out. A transformation from the dark ages to today and from today to the future requires an all-out crash fusion energy program.
This is a very simple question. You keep referring to a British Empire. Please explain what the British Empire is. Is it just England? Is it other countries involved? I'm just a little confused on that.
The British Empire is a financial oligarchy and a monarchy of the Queen of England, whose intention is to destroy the sovereignty of nation states, to reduce the world population, and to actually destroy the conception of human creative progress and everything that we've brought up here today. Mr. LaRouche has emphasized that the British Empire is not the British people, but the actual Queen of England and her consort and an empire whose financial oligarchy is to actually continue to treat human beings as slaves, or to represent that evil intention of what was or what is the Zeusian idea of man as slave, as animal, and to be culled and herded. So in short, that is why we have to destroy the British Empire, because it goes against every single aspect of what our human tradition of creative progress represents.
Just adding briefly, Wall Street is the British Empire. That's all the same.
Thank you, Matt. I'm just wondering why we haven't focused more on the general welfare clause when we speak to our politicians and all federal and state employees who take an oath to the Constitution. I think that would be a wonderful tool just to hammer it into their heads that they've taken an oath, okay, to look out for the general welfare of the society and, you know, grab their voting records, show that they're not voting, for the general welfare of the people of the United States, and they've broken their oath of office and bounce them off on their backsides.
Yeah, my question is for Mr. Billington regarding the nuclear power projects. I mean, after Fukushima, there was a major review of the nuclear power plants, whether they are safe or not, and with the green parties all over the place, they all protest against that, and they encourage more solar than any other thing. Why is this deviation from what is currently being professed or supported to nuclear energy? How can it be safer? And also, in view of the so-called heaters probably used, or possible weather wars that may emanate in the future from projects like HAARP and 19 others, how can these also be observed, and whether nuclear energy will be safe in earthquakes or in such projects, flooding such stations, like we saw recently in Serbia on the Balkans, for example, floods, which have unprecedented for 120 years. We are witnessing global warming beyond any doubt. Glaciers are melting down. So many things that makes nuclear plants unsafe, probably.
No. How many people died at Fukushima? Zero. Nobody died at Fukushima. Nobody died at Fukushima. Nobody's dying from the pollution. There's no pollution. This is all lies. This is the British green ideology. This is the attack on human knowledge. This is the attack on the brains of our citizens. This is the brainwashing that we have to absolutely root out and destroy, this green disease, green fascism. Fascism is green. So in terms of weather, I'll just mention that our science basement team is now deeply involved in looking into some very exciting new technologies that are being developed to tap into the water in the atmosphere through ionization. It's in areas like the desert in the United States that was on that map. We have this wonderful plan for Nawapa to bring water down from Canada, but it's actually too late. You have such a horrible drought brought on by changes in the solar system. that we have to find emergency measures now, and there are measures. They're going to require some real scientific battles, but we're involved in that, and we have to activate those as fast as we can. But there's no question but that we have to have a passion to destroy this green ideology and revive the idea of the creative power of the human mind over nature.
I just had one thing to add to that. I've been working with someone from Japan who is an ambassador for the International Emergency Managers Association, and one big mission that he has is to, in describing Fukushima, is to describe how unprepared they were for those two incidences to happen, one right after another, and to remind us to not ignore the possibilities of some dreadful event happening and take care of things ahead of time. He works very hard to get that message over, because certainly we've been warned before on issues, for instance, that could have averted some of the problems from Katrina, for instance. So just wanted to add that.
Just before your question, I'm reminded to tell people to go to the literature table, by the way, precisely for this sort of topic, where if you go there and you see the various things that we have there, there's an extensive story, I believe Megan Beats wrote, on the 30-year war against thermonuclear fusion. The truth is that the attacks on nuclear power were always an attack on thermonuclear fusion, which was known by the 1950s to be an absolutely feasible and immediately implementable energy capability. Nuclear power would have gone from nuclear fission to nuclear and then thermonuclear hybrids, fission-fusion hybrids, to commercial fusion power by no later than 1991. And the reason for the attacks on nuclear power have always been to stop that. That was always what it was about. It has never been about the question of radiation, never been about the question of pollution, never been about anything that people have been told. It was always because the fact was it was known that there was a process, an energy process from seawater, from deuterium and tritium, which could be implemented. And that's the secret. And so the issue of the collaboration with China, Russia, and so on is to unveil that secret, that Promethean secret for all of the human race. Okay? Sir, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Can anyone tell us what the British people themselves think about the monarchy? Are they giving their support? What have you been able to find out? Thank you.
No, it is. It's an excellent question. In general, they're scared to death to talk about it because they suspect that there's going to be some of our friends there who have publications and so forth in the past have held back from saying anything about the monarchy. They attack everything that the monarchy represents without putting the name on it. Right? That's beginning to break down. You probably saw that there was a revolution, an earthquake in Europe in the elections for the parliament last month, where the French destroyed the ruling party. The party of Le Pen, a conservative party, won twice as many votes as the governing socialist party, running against this European monster, basically against the British. And in England itself, the so-called UKIP, the UK Independence Party, a populist party, but they are against the existing parties, and they swept the election. Now, that's created a bit of a shift in England, where now, really for the first time, you're beginning to see some of these institutions say, this monarchy is sick, degenerate, and has to go. But it's not that much. It's going to require that America beats the British system here, the monarchy's power on Wall Street, in order to bring about a resolution of the British problem.
Hello. I bring greetings from the Schiller Institute in Denmark. And our entire European organization. And I just want to say that back in the late 1700s, there was a celebration of the ideas and the works of Friedrich Schiller in a small town north of Copenhagen. And then the message came in the middle of the celebration that Friedrich Schiller had died. And they were then they turned it into a memorial service. And they even sang a special verse that they composed of the Ode to Joy in his honor. But then they found out that he had not died. But he was very sick, and he was very poor and forced to work, even though he was sick, because of problems with money. So they, the poet there, Baggesen, organized the Danish finance minister and a prince of Denmark to support financially Friedrich Schiller for several years, which really saved his life. And I just bring this up to say that our European organization, at this time, as Helga said, the point of the Schiller Institute was to look and seek out the best ideas in whatever culture, whatever country, even on the other side of the world. And our European organization is working very hard to work to publicize the ideas of Lenin, LaRouche, Helga, and the others in Europe. But we also know that it's up to you. If we're going to make this break, if we're going to make the break for the future and avoid the disaster, it has to come from the United States. And the point of this story is two. One, giving money is very important, and I urge everybody to do that. And the other one is that it has to come from here, and we are doing what we can, but the eyes of the world are on you and what you decide to do as a result of this conference. Thank you.
And obviously on that note, we are going to conclude. All right, our concert starts at 7:30. We'll see you all back here. And for those that won't be able to come, thank you for coming to our conference today, and come back.